Good morning. Welcome to the Mr. Elvin Podcast. It's Monday, December 21st, the morning after Washington's 20-15 loss to Seattle. Here to talk about that, it's the Montez SWAT to my Dustin Hopkins missed extra point, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. Why do I get a clever nickname and you're just sort of a phrase of something bad?
What's the Dustin Hopkins missed field extra point? He didn't doink it. I don't know. It hurt.
It hurt. It was not good for the game, but I would say it was far from the biggest problem. Did you get to watch this one?
I watched every second, and I agree. I just needed a goat in the intro. I'm not putting this on Hopkins.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, I'm okay putting it on him for, like, I don't know, there's a word for it, like, you know, the acute cause versus the sort of, I don't know, something. I have no idea.
He's the kicker. It's a very simple word for this. He's the kicker. They take the blame.
So I have a very specific starting talking point for this one. I know usually you start.
No,
but
please, go.
So I listened to the NBC Sports Washington podcast after the game later in the evening, and I was dumbfounded to find them talking about what this game meant about Dwayne Haskins' future potential with this team. And I was just staggered at the very idea that there might be a future with Dwayne Haskins on this team. What were your thoughts on this topic?
It was a very confusing day if you were trying to referendumize Dwayne Haskins. I think when he threw that really bad pick, the second pick in the third quarter, I can't remember if that was before or after the Carlos Hyde 50-yard touchdown to put them down 20-3. I think it might have been right before.
It was before, but anyway.
Yeah, that was kind of like the nail in the Haskins coffin for me. Like, it's not like I was holding out hope that he was the guy, but whew, man, last week, the near pick and then that pick, they were just so bad. They were such bad throws and decisions. I don't think anybody was like holding out hope that Haskins was the man in Washington going forward, especially not in that moment in that third quarter. But coming back to make this a game was admirable. And I wouldn't mind if he was on the roster, or maybe he might've like shown some value if you're talking about in a trade context, maybe.
I'll buy that last one. Maybe he stepped himself all the way up to like a conditional sixth or something from having no value whatsoever. But I just, for me, it was even less the picks. It was the first quarter for sure where he was what, you know, 3 for 3 for 8 yards or something. Like the second quarter.
No, I think he was 5 for 8 for 6 yards, or it was something like even worse.
It was preposterous. And yeah. I've just become, over the years, I've become so skeptical of fourth quarter quarterback yardage, because it just, whatever it is the defense do to play soft in the fourth quarter, the bend but don't break stuff, it just seems like it makes it much easier for quarterbacks to look competent. I'm fine if he's on the roster, but I would be fine if for whatever reason they just turned around and cut him today. I would not feel like there were any missed opportunities as a result.
Well, and yes, the interception was on top of the earlier interception was on top of, you know, the first half to two thirds of this game where they only scored 3 points, you know, so there was some stacking going on to lead me to the conclusion that like he was rubbish. But I don't know. I mean, I think as a backup quarterback, he's not bad. At least he's young and maybe there's some potential in there. And, you know, his numbers, if you look at for the season, his numbers are eerily similar to Alex Smith, both in terms of counting and rate statistics. It's pretty crazy. Like the only difference between them is wins and losses. It's kind of a big difference.
Which is a significant difference. And as we've now been talking about for three straight weeks, the Alex Smith intangible statistic appears to be very, very, very real. And Dwayne appears to not have that.
I believe you mean the skin tangibles.
No,
have we rebranded the skin tangibles? Do we have to change the skin tangibles name?
Yes, okay. They're the whiff tangibles now.
Yes, actually, that's pretty good. So one other thing on your point about the garbage time statistics. I don't know that Seattle was in a prevent defense or anything like that when Washington scored its 2 touchdowns to come back and make a game of this. But Haskins definitely was able to get into a rhythm, like to establish some sort of flow to the offense. And maybe that's just because they're playing from behind and he gets to just get more reps. I mean, he had 55 passes because they needed to throw, you know? So until they got to that point where they were down 23, the offense was inept. And then from that point forward, they looked really good. And they were, you know, if Haskins had made that extra point or they had gotten a 2-point conversion on the second touchdown, they're playing for a game tying field goal at the end. As it was, they were playing for the game winning touchdown.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to say that they were in a formal prevent. I just think there's something, even if it's just mentally, when, because I think Seattle knew that at any moment, if they needed to, they could put together an 8-minute drive and end the game. I really think that, even though it's not what happened, even though that doesn't square with what actually occurred.
Right.
I think that, I don't know. It's very uninspiring watching this team with him at the helm, because a lot of the problems, in addition to his numbers being the same as Alex Smith, a lot of the problems are there. Like, Smith's first halves have not been great. Maybe it's a coaching thing. Maybe Scott Turner. I don't know. But there's just something about the way the team looks when Dwayne's running it that, I mean, it's much less fun to watch. And
yeah, I need the splits on the first half, second half points across the whole season. Because, I mean, it's brutal. I keep forgetting, too. I think because as a Washington fan, I'm conditioned to think that it's hopeless. I keep thinking that when they're down like 13-3 at halftime, like it's game over. But it's not. Every week, it's the same story.
Right. Now that's, in fact, game started, finally, at last.
Yeah.
I also, it's also really just annoying from a pure viewership perspective because, you know, I don't know about you, but by the time kickoff comes each week, I'm, like, excited for the game. It's, you know, you've been looking forward to it. You're ready to sit down and watch it. And this thing where their first three possessions are just functionally useless really sucks a lot of the wind out of my enthusiasm.
I was legitimately disappointed today. Like, the whole first half into the third quarter, not today, yesterday, like, just feeling real sad. You know, and it wasn't just Haskins. We spent this whole time talking about Haskins. What about our best defense in the NFL defense? I mean, all week, they got a lot of smoke. They got a lot of gas from especially the national media talking about, oh, they're a top three defense. This is a quarterback away from a Super Bowl contender. And maybe they are. And I know they only gave up 20 points to Seattle, a team that's averaging 30. And I know that they put the clamps down in the second half, like, you know, really like the last quarter plus. But Seattle also came out, I felt like, pretty conservative and got up to that 20-3 lead without a whole lot of effort on offense. I think they could have had their 30 if they really wanted it.
I am inclined to agree, although, like what I was just saying, you would think if that was the case, they would have run the score up a little more as Washington pulled closer. But yeah, no, there was just a lack of impact plays on the defense. They had the one swat to an interception, but yeah. The even when the defense was feeling solid, they weren't. They need to change the game. I mean, they need to do what they did last week for this team to win. It feels like now I do still think the team could be a quarterback away from genuine legitimacy, because I think if you actually score in the first quarter or even just the first half, the defense playing from ahead might have more opportunities than they do right now.
Well, I mean, it was hard to watch. Like, I give the defense props, and it really culminated in the Montez Sweat interception, because the last like three or four defensive, well, not possessions, but whatever, Seattle possessions, the defense looked great. But up to that point, Seattle had three guys go over 50 yards rushing. The run statistics are ridiculous. Carson, Hyde, and Wilson had, let's see, 170 yards plus on like 23 carries. The Hyde 50-yard touchdown was gruesome. That was hard to watch. I think the defense was, I think, as frustrating for me as the offense over the first two-thirds of the game.
I can agree with that. I can definitely agree with that. I don't know. It feels the defense I didn't feel hopeless with, whereas Haskins, I genuinely. There were points where I went into full on, you know, like, ugh, I'm just going to turn to red zone kind of mode in that first half.
Yep.
It was a tough slog.
Oh, yeah. But then the last, you know, their last three possessions where they got the two touchdowns and were driving for the third. I mean, that was really fun. Like, I'm high-fiving my kid. I'm super into it. I was actually thinking they might do it. That was super fun. In the end, it's strange because this is such a wild, you know, up and down of a game, or down then up. But it pretty much ended up exactly where we thought it would, which is you would think that Seattle's going to win this game. And you would think that you're hoping, if not expecting, the defense to hold them to about 20 points. And you're hoping, not expecting, that the offense could get to 20 points. And in the end, you know, they lost 20-15, and they, you know, they had a shot at the end. It was pretty much exactly the outcome that, if you were to predict, like, the most likely outcome, like, this was it.
That's a good point. And it's one where the results and the way that we got to the results don't exactly match. But you're right. I mean, this is exactly what we expected. And I just keep coming back to this first half thing. You know, we talked about, oh, if Hopkins makes the extra point and then you're playing for a field goal, whatever. But the flip side is, if you score one touchdown somewhere in the first two quarters, it's just a totally different game, like a totally different game. So I don't know. It was weird.
It's strange. They got a field goal near the end of the first half, and that felt like such a victory. You know, just to be down 10 at the half, I was like thrilled with that. That was my highlight of the first two-thirds of this game, was the lone field goal.
Well, I feel like that's the default, not default, but that's been the most common emotion for me this season, is the first half ends, I feel vaguely demoralized, and then I look at the score and I'm like, well, I mean, it's really only a, insert whatever, 10-point game, 13-point game, whatever. It's really not that insurmountable. How about that? But it, just the feeling of hopelessness and whatever is strong during those first halves, which is an improvement over previous years where that feeling of hopelessness has been present throughout the game. So, you know, maybe they're improving.
Well, there's some weird stuff also. Like, there's some weird dynamics here where I'm looking at the schedule and I'm looking at the other teams in the NFC's, their schedules, as we have been for the last couple weeks. But I'm also looking at, like, the NFC wildcard standings for that first-round matchup. we're in uncharted waters? Uncharted?
I think it's just uncharted.
Like, we're in uncharted waters. I can't remember the last time I was, like, looking at the potential playoff opponents.
Well, and the magic number right now, which it's cool to be able to talk about magic numbers, is, as I understand it, it would be two, right? Any combination of two.
Yeah.
I don't know, but so if Washington, this week to me feels like the big week, because this is the, I think the Eagles right now at best are a toss-up, and at worst look like exactly the kind of team that really has been challenging this defense with Jalen Hurts as opposed to Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. But the Panthers game should be winnable. Carolina should be checked out. They should want to win this one for Ron under, even when I thought we were going to go, you know, 4-12, this was a game that I felt like the team was really going to try to win for their coach. So this to me is the one. They've really, really, really got to win this game.
Well, so I think you're right. I mean, if the magic number, so to speak, is two, as we said, I feel like the Washington just really needs to win one. The Eagles have a tough game this week. Just kidding. They play Dallas. But isn't it, if Washington just wins one more game, the Eagles can't catch them, because the Eagles only have four wins.
Correct.
But the Giants could win out and catch Washington and tie them at seven wins. And the Giants have the tiebreaker.
Yeah, it's the magic number is two with the Giants, I think. And you're right. I hadn't even factored the Eagles into it. But as far as the real magic number is, Washington needs to win this week. And then the magic number is one Giants loss or one more Washington win.
I think the most likely thing here is if Washington can win one more game, they're in.
I think that's right. Who do the Giants have?
If Washington just wins one more game, well, there goes Philly.
Correct. And then the Giants,
if Washington wins one more game, the Giants would have to win both. Which,
even if the Giants
look done, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, the Giants have the Ravens this week, right?
The Giants have the Ravens. Hold on, I'll tell you one second while their schedule loads. Come on, Yahoo Sports.
Oh, wow. Really calling them out by name, man.
Yeah, it says they have no games scheduled. No, I think that they do. I'm pretty sure that they do. No, they have the Ravens this week. I'm not sure who they have week 7.
And wait, what day? When is the Ravens game? Because there's games on like 6 days this week.
Okay, so yes, Giants at Ravens Sunday, and okay. then Giants Dallas, January 3rd. So, I just think yep. it's very unlikely that the Giants win both of those games.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty likely that the Giants can beat Dallas, no? I mean, I guess Dallas...
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, it's kind of a coin flip, I think. Like, Giants-Dallas is kind of a coin flip. And Giants-Ravens, with the Ravens playing for the playoffs and playing well at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be like a 65-35, maybe 70-30, you know, Baltimore-New York. I think the Giants' chances of winning out, what I'm saying is the Giants' chances of winning out are probably... below 20%.
I'll buy it. I'd probably put it at 25% because yeah. I think next week is a coin toss. I don't know. You're right. Whatever it is. And the point is we haven't even used the most like overused phrase in playoff watching, which is Washington controls their own destiny. Mm. You can definitely say that. If they yes. win out, they're in.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I just think like they only need to win one of these two games. And I really want it to be the Carolina game. Like coming back to your assertion that like, this is the week, like they're playing a Carolina team that's lost 3 in a row, a Carolina team that's 4-10, has nothing to play for. I mean, it's better for them to lose in terms of draft position. Washington is only favored by 2 on the line I'm looking at. So it's no gimme, but I mean, this is a game you should win if you're serious about making the playoffs.
If you found out that Alex Smith was starting, what would you jump the line to?
You know, it's weird because, again, I implore you to look up the statistics. They're exactly the same, more or less, between Haskins and Smith. Yet I would still give Washington about a +7 with Smith in there over Haskins.
I'm so glad you said that because I was thinking the same thing, and it sounded insane to me in my head. But I think the difference is significant. It's stark between those two. So do we know, is there any chance Haskins plays this week? Smith plays this week? I'm sorry.
I think there's a chance, but I think it seems to be one of those things where like his calf has to be all the way there, all the way back. And it just wasn't this week. Maybe it will be for Carolina. And when you asking that, is there a chance that Haskins plays? It reminded me, there was a moment in the third quarter. I think I was tweeting out something like, you know, whatever, throw dirt on Haskins, he's done. I was really wondering if they might put in Montez or Henneke. I don't even know who the backup was this week, but it wouldn't have been crazy if another guy came in.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Although that's an interesting point. I wonder if next week what they'll do is even if Smith is at like, you know, 85-90%, if they start Haskins but put Smith as the backup, and if for some reason this theoretically winnable game goes off the rails, you put Smith in. I wonder if that's what they'll do. I don't know.
I mean, I want a scenario where the defense just dominates Carolina. You know, like this could be a game where they come in and look dominant. You have a pretty average to below average quarterback and offense that you're facing off with. I mean, they could come in and just announce their presence and take over this game. I'd love for Smith and Gibson to be back in the lineup and for the offense to have like be somewhat threatening. You know, like somewhat firing, because then, you know, it starts to look like, I think there's a version of the next 2 weeks where they're just hanging on and like they win the NFC East almost by attrition. But there's another version where like they win these next two games, they finish the season 8-8 and nobody wants to play them in the first round.
Yeah. And there's a third version where they win this week, the Giants lose this week, and then they genuinely do rest all the injured players just to get them a week to recover. I mean,
and then there's a fourth version where they lose both games and miss the playoffs.
Yeah,
there's a lot of different outcomes here.
It's interesting that you say how average to below average the Carolina quarterbacking situation is, because I think if you put Teddy Bridgewater at the helm of this Washington team, I think they've already locked up the playoffs and are possibly resting players this week.
Okay, so I agree. I think Washington just has like one of the worst quarterback situations in the league. And Carolina has like the 20th quarterback situation, 25th, something like that.
Well, it's also that Bridgewater, to me, is kind of an Alex Smith type who, you know, he's not going to go out and win you a ton of games except for his weird intangible stat, but he's a smart, safe quarterback. He's capable of winning a game, and that's what this team needs right now. That's the other interesting thing about where they're at now is thinking about the offseason. I know you're not there yet because you're just watching the playoff charts, but thinking about the offseason, I no longer think they need like a crazy home run at quarterback to solve their problems. I think that if they can find the equivalent of a Teddy Bridgewater or something like that, like just a reliable, you know, replacement level NFL starter, I think that could do a lot for this team, you know?
I don't know. My pipe dream, and you almost thought you had it with Smith and Haskins, was like the Smith-Mahomes situation, where it's like you come back into the season with Smith as your guy, thinking he's maybe just a little bit healthier, a little bit more removed from injury. And injuries sort of strange. Feels like maybe an understatement. but you draft a guy that you could groom into the, you know, being the quarterback, or you could put him right in if he's ready. I feel like Washington needs to find the guy. And they clearly don't have it. So I'm not too into like bringing in a Teddy Bridgewater.
What about bringing in a Matthew Stafford, somebody who is better than a Bridgewater, but also not young, not the solution, so to speak?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of interesting quarterbacks out there potentially this offseason, like Sam Darnold, like Carson Wentz, you know, I'm like Matt Stafford. Not that I necessarily want any of these guys, but that's kind of an interesting offseason QB crop.
I think Darnold is really interesting because Darnold could be both. Darnold could be, you know, a young guy that could sit under Smith if Smith is healthy, but could also start. I think I love, if there's been one lesson of this year, it's this idea that players who previously played under Adam Gase, you just can't trust their statistics. I would love to have the next Ryan Tannehill, you know?
Well, yeah, and there's also another couple guys. Jameis Winston, who spent the season on the bench in New Orleans, but was a number one overall pick and threw for like 5,000 yards last year. Cam Newton, who looked great initially this season and now looks awful. So I don't know. I mean, I'm more like find the best possible quarterback wherever you are in the draft and take that dude or trade up if you really want a guy. But there's other options. I'd be surprised if it was a Smith Haskins duo coming back next year.
God, I hope not. And we're forgetting about Kyle Allen, who theoretically is going to show up in the mix somewhere. I just think it's interesting that we are able now, I think, to be simultaneously excited about the playoff possibilities and about like a variety of offseason possibilities. It's not even like one of those years where you're like, well, at least we get Chase Young. At least we're locked in and we've got this, you know, specific guy. And at least we're not the Jets. That's a really good thing.
Whew, could you imagine? Gosh, as anti-tanking as I am, I mean, when you're 0-14 and Trevor Lawrence, like generational QB prospect, is right there to win a game in week 15. Whew, that's tough.
This town, tough. I'm sure New York media is even worse, but this town would riot if that happened at this point.
One thing on the playoff picture I did want to mention is that Seattle winning actually is pretty good yesterday. Cause I think the way that playoffs would unfold here is the NFC East division champ would host the first round. That's for sure. And then play the best wild card, the wild card team with the best record. I think correct. That's how it works.
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
So Seattle winning yesterday and the Rams losing to the Jets enabled Seattle to ascend to the NFC West lead. And put the Rams down in the wild card pool. I'd much rather Washington play the Rams or the Buccaneers, who are tied at 9-5 as like the top wild card record. I'd much rather play either of those teams than Seattle again.
I would much rather play the Rams simply because every other time they've been in the playoffs this century, it's been the Buccaneers or the Seahawks, and I'm just kind of tired of it.
Yeah. Well, also, I would just like, I think the whole mobile quarterback thing is an issue. It seems to be an issue for Washington. I don't want any part of Seattle or Arizona for that matter in that first round. I'd much rather have like Jared Goff or even Tom Brady stationary in the pocket with the Washington defensive line coming after him.
I agree with you on that, although the Rams sure did disassemble Washington. Wasn't that just like 5 weeks ago or something? It feels like that was just not long ago.
Well, just 5 weeks ago, I thought we had a shitty defense. And then this week, I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. Like 5 weeks ago, I was questioning the numbers being like, how is this anywhere close to a top 10 defense? And then this week, literally, it's a national like talking point. Does Washington have the best defense in the NFL?
Yeah, it is a wild turnaround. You're correct. I don't know. It's a weird place to be in because it just feels like, is this what hope feels like? Is this what having an actual functioning organization feels like?
I mean, the defense must be great if our quarterback is Dwayne Haskins. We have one wide receiver in Terry McLaurin. Our running back / third down back is J.D. McKissick, who I think we got off the scrap heap in the offseason. Yet we're looking at like who we're going to host in the playoffs and deciding who we'd rather face.
I was astounded by, you know, the stat that kept running yesterday was McLaurin versus Metcalf. I didn't realize how close McLaurin is to Metcalf in some of those stats. I knew Terry was good, and obviously I've liked watching him, but just by sheer function of not having had actual quarterbacking for most of his NFL career, I assumed he was farther behind DK Metcalf than that. That surprised me.
And I don't know how much it helps or hurts him from a production standpoint that like he's the only guy. Like Washington doesn't really have a number two receiver, a wide receiver. Whereas Seattle has Metcalf and Lockett. Lockett's probably put up even bigger numbers than both of them. You know, so it increases their effectiveness that you can't just lock down one guy. But, you know, Wilson's also spreading the ball around.
That is a fair point, which I had not considered. But yeah, it's good that you switched to wide receiver because, I mean, would we be okay with Logan Thomas being the starting tight end for this team moving forward?
1,000%. Actually, you know what? I hate it when people say anything more than 100%. 100%. He had 13 catches yesterday. I mean, a lot of them were like little dump passes, including one. There was a pass. Sorry to come back to Haskins. I think it was on the field goal drive in the first half. There's like no time left. I think they have like one timeout. I think they had one timeout and there was under a minute left. It was like 2nd and 10. And they're in field goal range. Haskins drops back. There's nobody open. And at the last second, like his fourth, you know, progression, he slings it out to Logan Thomas behind the line of scrimmage, away from the sideline, for a negative 2-yard completion, and they have to burn their last timeout. And that was one of those moments, like a smart quarterback does not do that shit ever. Like, and by the way, Jonathan Vilma praised Haskins for the smart play. But what he did was he lost yards, so he took 2 yards back and just hurt their field goal position, didn't give them any better chance at a touchdown, of course, and burned their last timeout. So really, the play just ensured that the ceiling on that drive was going to be a field goal. I guess you could praise him that, you know, the floor wasn't an interception.
Yeah, he didn't turn it over. He's got that going for him.
It was just such an asshole. It was such an obvious, like, just throw the ball away play. It seems so obvious, but I don't know. It's like it was a perfect example of like situational awareness and why Alex Smith might be a +7.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's been the Dwayne Haskins experience in a nutshell. It's like, he may do some things fine, but his boneheaded decisions are really, really dismaying.
The second interception was that, like, I don't know how, like last week's terrible near interception against San Francisco that I was kind of freaking out about on the podcast. Like, that was just a terrible throw. It just sailed over the middle. Wasn't a bad decision, just a terrible throw. The second interception this week, I don't know what he was doing. He like threw the ball, telegraphed a pass downfield into double coverage on like a first down.
Yeah, it was
such a bad decision and bad throw.
And then I thought the TV did a pretty good job, or the TV broadcast did a pretty good job of breaking down that one. And I felt like they were pretty positive towards Haskins for most of the game. He must have been really delightful in their pregame prep or something. But even they couldn't sugarcoat that one. I mean, that was just, that was terrible. It was a bad play.
Yeah. I will say, like, I bet Haskins is a pretty personable guy. And I do admire, like, the way he's kind of seemingly changed his approach. I also, like, admire that the dude seems fit. Like, he seems a lot more fit this year than he did last year. So there's that.
Yeah, but these are all things, and I think this is also something they did say on the NBC Sports podcast, but, like, these are all things that we should have been praising week five of his rookie season. This is not where we should be 15 weeks into his second year. Now, with, you know, you look at Josh Allen, who is the most optimistic possible hope for Haskins at this point, and I guarantee you there were, you know, Buffalo versions of us for two straight years just complaining about Josh Allen and wanting to get him the hell out of there. And now he's untouchable. I mean, he's not untouchable. He's great.
Well, yeah, he's a borderline MVP candidate. And the team has already won the division for the first time in 25 years. And that's a good call out, because, like, he's also exactly the type of guy I'm hoping for when I'm talking about. Like, whatever your pick is, use it on a quarterback. Because he was from what, like, not North Dakota. He was from Wyoming. And he was, I don't know, not mid to bottom first round. He might have been, like, the 10th pick, maybe the 7th pick. But he was sort of a reach. He wasn't, like, the top guy in that draft. There was, like, four quarterbacks in that first round. Like, Sam Darnold and Lamar Jackson. Kyler Murray, I think, was number one. Am I getting that wrong?
No, because Darnold was number one that year.
It was Darnold number one. There was another good quarterback. There was a good quarterback, not Darnold, in that, the top of that. Anyway, it wasn't like Josh Allen was the man. Josh Allen was kind of a risk, and they saw the potential, and they went for it. And here they are, you know, 3 years later, 4 years later, back-to-back playoffs and division title.
Well, the problem is that that's what they did with Dwayne Haskins. That is the entire Haskins story. And
yeah, do it again.
Right. Exactly.
I was looking at the standings, and I was just thinking, like, the only path to getting to the Super Bowl is, like, draft a quarterback.
So it was, like, Baker Mayfield was first overall. Darnold was third. Right. Allen went seventh. Josh Rosen went 10th. So that's just an outright miss.
And then Jackson was later, I think.
37. Like,
the end of the round.
He was 37.
So you have five QBs in that draft. And three of them look like franchise QBs. Two of them are
now,
probably not. Yeah, right now.
So, but the thing is, the other way to look at it is that, you know, you have one abject bust. There's no other way to describe Rosen.
Yeah,
you have one guy where it took 2 years plus of genuine patience before you got here, which I think is really significant. I think the feeling now is that if the guy doesn't step in and look like Mahomes right away, you're concerned. And even Mahomes, you know, rested for most of that rookie season, you know?
It's tough, though. I mean, if you look at, like, say, the division leaders in the AFC, it's three teams that drafted their quarterback: Chiefs, Steelers, Bills. And then you've got Tennessee, who I don't know, man. You just got to think you got lucky there with Tannehill.
No, it's even post Adam Gase. I'm telling you, it's a guy who spent his career with Adam Gase, and then suddenly you realize, oh wait, no, he's actually a good player. That's why we want Sam Darnold.
And then you look in the NFC, and you've got the division leaders, of course, Washington, but then it's Seattle, Russ Wilson, Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers, New Orleans, Breeze. They didn't draft Breeze, but it was kind of a weird, funky situation forever ago where the Chargers had drafted two Hall of Fame quarterbacks and had one to burn. So I don't know. I mean, yes, you could be a contender and get a quarterback another way, but it does seem that most contenders drafted their quarterback.
Who is the last? I feel like you missed one NFC quarterback. Who's
Dwayne Haskins? I was going through the four division leaders. If you look at the wild card,
wait, but I feel like did I ignore one? You had
Packers, Rodgers.
Oh, maybe that's
Seahawks, Wilson.
Yeah, it was Packers.
Saints, Breeze.
I didn't hear you say Packers. That's
So there's a few outliers, you know, like a Tannehill, or a Breeze, where you've got like a non-drafted quarterback or a free agent or whatever quarterback leading a contender, but like it's like three quarters of them are drafted QBs.
And the thing about the thing about Tannehill and Breeze that still makes me argue for Darnold as the choice heading into next year is that both of them made their move early to the point where when you talk about Breeze, you're like, yeah, he wasn't drafted by New Orleans, but like for all intents and purposes, he's New Orleans quarterback Drew Brees. You know, I barely remember that he was with the Chargers.
Been there for like 12 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tannehill was forgotten. He was nothing when they signed him. You know, he was, it was, you know, it didn't register at all as a significant signing. And that's what I think you're hoping. That's what I'm hoping for next year is that you can get a guy where you get genuine production above what you expect, but still at something of a value contract wise. Whereas Stafford, you're going to have to pay the full Kirk Cousins, you know.
Yeah. Price. I was thinking about Cousins this weekend as well. And like when he went to Minnesota, that was so bitter. Like he was a decent quarterback. He's being valued as a good quarterback. And we're just kind of letting him go for nothing. And we're giving Alex Smith, who's older and not as good, almost as much money. That was an apocalyptic like moment.
Yeah, that was bad. That's still my favorite of our podcasts, I will say, though.
Yeah, the emergency pod. Yeah,
that was good. I liked that one.
But look at Minnesota. Like, they're out of the playoffs, most likely. Cousins has been just okay, you know? I don't know where I was going with this, but whatever.
Cousins is fascinating because, yet again, like, his receivers have crazy numbers. Justin Jefferson should be Offensive Rookie of the Year. And yet, somehow, I don't know. He's a weird one, man. I never need to discuss him again. Can you imagine if he came back to town, though?
Well, people would lose their mind. Well, like, the Bills are obviously flying high right now, and Stephon Diggs is having one of those, like, is he one of the best wide receiver moments? I don't know what voice that was. Is that my Bill Simmons voice? Are we sure Stephon Diggs is not the best wide receiver?
Stephon Diggs for Terry McLaurin. Who says no?
I saw somebody say, like, he got out of Kirk Cousins' jail. And that was funny to me. Like, his cousin has fallen to the point in Minnesota where they're talking about wide receivers being in jail with him, which is kind of strange.
Did you hear the soundbite of Jefferson yelling at Kirk yesterday?
So, yeah.
I don't know. I don't need to. We don't need to kick Kirk Cousins around again anymore. Like, every so often I'll listen to, a Washington football podcast. Kevin Sheehan does it a lot, other people, and they start talking about Kirk as if he's still a going concern here. And I'm just like, man, like, can't we at least not have can't the positive side of him leaving be that we don't have to talk about him anymore?
Okay. This team with Kirk Cousins, are they 6-8? Are they 8-6?
I think they're exactly where they are now, but they have better statistics.
Oh, good take. Really split the hair. All right. Well, I hope next Monday is a victory pod. If it is, I'm gonna be very excited if they beat Carolina. That's gonna be a big deal.
Yeah, me too.
I'm gonna be very nervous if it's coming down to having to beat Philly. We'll see a week from now.
Do we have 2 minutes for Mandalorian finale talk?
Yeah, sure. Spoiler zone. We're going to spoil it if you haven't seen the Mandalorian finale. Proceed.
Well, no, so this is now, it's like they keep refining the question that I ask you. So this time, I assume you recognize the outside character that they brought in?
Yes, although it took me a minute to get there.
Well, that's because he looked like a PlayStation 1 video game cutscene, so there's that. Right. How did you feel about it? How did it land for you? How did the arrival of Luke Skywalker to take the child land for you?
I have three thoughts. One is overall, like, I just thought it was a super fun, thrilling finale. Like, I was totally into it. It was just very enjoyable 40 minutes of television. That was great. Thank you, Mandalorian. Hurry back now, you hear? Two. They need to stop dropping these shows on Thursday at midnight. There's too many spoilers out there. All day Friday, I'm like playing dodgeball with spoilers. The Mandalorian finale. I mean, I got work to do. I'm not watching that shit till Friday night. Yep. And you know who spoiled it for me? Of all people, Mark Hamill spoiled it for me. What's he doing? What is he doing? He goes on Twitter and he tweeted something on Friday. Hey, anybody seen any good TV shows lately? Some cheeky emoji.
He loves emojis. It's really weird. You don't follow Mark Hamill on Twitter, though, do you?
No, I don't follow Mark Hamill on Twitter. I'm not a fucking nerd.
That's exactly why I was asking. Even I don't follow Mark Hamill on Twitter.
Shared into my timeline. And of course, I see this and I have to, gnaw on it for a minute. I'm like, why would Mark Hamill? Oh, Luke Skywalker is going to be on the fucking Mandalorian season finale. Like, so I knew that. That sucked. I don't know if they're blame Disney Plus or Mark Hamill, but I would have much rather not know that Luke Skywalker wasn't going to come back.
I'm wondering, for me, I might have liked it better because I wasn't thrilled with it just from a narrative point of view. If you don't know who Luke Skywalker is, basically, if you have not seen the original Star Wars trilogy, the ending of that doesn't make sense to you, which means it shouldn't make sense to any of the characters there. He never says, like, I run a school for Jedi, or you can find me on whatever planet, or I'm Luke Skywalker, I blew up the Death Star, or like anything. He just shows up. They're like, are you a Jedi?
Introduce himself.
He doesn't say anything. They're like, are you a Jedi? He's like, yep. They're like, great. Yeah,
okay. Well, on the other hand though, I mean, the performance with wiping out like an entire fleet of dark troopers with the lightsaber kind of implies that he is like a master level Jedi.
Sure. You're not wrong. It just seemed really weird to me in the story. Plus, I really, really didn't like that they just basically parachuted somebody in. Like, you could have swapped Luke Skywalker in with anybody, including things like, I don't know, Superman, Dwayne Haskins, Mickey Mouse, and it makes
Montez Sweat.
Right, exactly.
On a screen pass.
Right, exactly. It could have ended with Montez Sweat tipping a dark trooper into somebody's waiting hands, and it would have made about as much narrative sense as this did. I was frustrated because I was thrilled by it, because I was supposed to be thrilled by it. It pushed the nostalgia buttons it was supposed to push. But just from a story perspective, I was like, what even are we doing here? Like, this entire year's arc has built up to some rando flying in from a 40-year-old movie. It was really weird. It was just a really strange decision.
Yeah. I don't know. Who did you think Baby Yoda was summoning from the summoning stone or whatever it was called?
Well, so I thought it was going to be
like, who else could, what other Jedi was going to come in?
We would have to go really nerdy for me to fully answer that. But I thought it was going to be somebody else from one of Dave Filoni's cartoons. I just assumed we were going to get that. Yeah. But even just from a structure narrative standpoint, if it had been Ahsoka coming back two episodes later, basically doing the Han Solo move of saying, I thought about it. The kid needs a master. I can do it. You know, like, great. I'm sold. That's thrilling. You get all the same impact, but it makes sense. I could list a bunch of nerdy other options of who might be knocking around out there, but they're all just as bad.
I was wondering if that was my own shortcoming, like, because in my head I was like, first of all, Mark Hamill already spoiled the fucking finale. Thank you, Mark Hamill. But second of all, I was like, it's either him or Ahsoka. I don't know who else would have come back, but I knew one of them was going to come back.
Well, and then they did this weird thing where the way they you're supposed to be wondering, you know, as he arrives, and they sort of reveal it slowly. You see him through the screen in black and white, so you can't see what color the lightsaber is. Then you see the green lightsaber, which, you know, must mean Luke. Then you see the robot hand or the gloved hand.
I thought that was all cool, like watching that whole thing unfold, like through the shitty monitors were in the whatever you call that area.
It was super cool. It was super cool. It was just weird because it felt like what they were doing was setting it up to make you go, is that Luke? Oh, I think it's Luke. Oh, this latest clue, it makes me think it's Luke. And then when they reveal that, yes, it's Luke, it's like, well, that's not how that sort of narrative trick is supposed to work. I'm supposed to be like, oh my God, it's Luke. It's Luke. It's Luke. Oh, it's somebody I've never seen.
Not only is it Luke, but it's like not Luke as he looked.
Right.
And not Luke as he looks. I'm not going to say it was like Uncanny Valley Luke. It wasn't like Polar Express level of strangeness in terms of likeness, but it wasn't right. It didn't feel right.
I thought it was pretty uncanny. I thought it looked like in an old video game. It wasn't even a cutscene where like they'd be doing something in the middle. I thought it was like if you're doing a character select screen and you know you have a really good graphic of the guy for that, and he's just sort of standing there. That's what.
Yeah.
It was. I was underwhelmed by the Luke Skywalker of it all in this one.
So how did they? Was that entirely a digital creation, or like did they somehow put an effect on Mark Hamill? Was he like? I don't know how they made that.
None of the above. It was a stand-in, and they mapped Mark Hamill digitally onto him. I'm not clear if Mark Hamill recorded new dialogue, because it didn't sound anything like Mark Hamill. So I don't know. Maybe they did face mapping on modern Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
But I mean, like,
I don't know what would be preferable, because like, what was that movie from last year that was like 3 hours long, at least 3 hours long, that had Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci and it was like up for all the awards.
The Irishman.
Yes. They made like all those old dudes like try to look young, like a 40-year-old Robert De Niro. And good God, it did not work for me whatsoever. So this might have been preferable to that.
No, but the director of this episode was Peyton Reed, who directed both Ant-Man movies. And in Ant-Man 1, they start with a flashback to the 80s and they de-age Michael Douglas to about his like Basic Instinct era. And it was a billion times better than this, a quadrillion times better than this, and that movie was made 4 years ago.
I really thought you were going to say they de-aged Paul Rudd, and I was like, whoops, to freaking die.
the whole movie, he just looked exactly like he did a decade before. Yeah. It was amazing.
It's Paul Rudd in Clueless, and also Paul Rudd in Ant-Man. It's this Paul Rudd.
Yeah, no, and they did it for Robert Downey in one of the Iron Man movies, and that was a little clunkier, because I remember young Robert Downey being skinnier. I mean, we all were, but you know, like, just he carried himself differently, whereas like the Irishman, the Robert, it physically looked wrong. Just look on YouTube for the you know, whatever it is, the de-aging scene in Ant-Man. I think it's in the first one. I
do have a question, an unresolved question from the finale. Near the end game there, what's his name, the villain, the big bad from Breaking Bad,
Giancarlo Esposito,
Giancarlo,
whatever his name
is. So he shoots one of the Mandalorian woman, who I forget her name. She was introduced as a main character earlier this season. And she had like she was like out for blood. She wanted that dude's Darksaber.
I couldn't even tell. So you think it was Bo-Katan that he shot?
I thought it was. And so this is my question. Is she dead?
I don't know. They really just dropped that entire thing. Plus, that was another thing I didn't like. Like, I hate, my least favorite fantasy trope is the like, you can take this, but only if you win it in battle. Like, shut up.
That whole thing was, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was like, are they going to have to fight now? If they're not fighting, like, please move on quickly.
I admired that the lead Mandalorian tried to do the same. It was like, fine, I yield, take it. And like,
yeah, I like that.
I don't know, but that was annoying. And then did you watch the post-credits scene?
Well, hold on. Before we get to the post-credits scene. How is this set up for next season, by the way? So, like, we need Baby Yodes on the show.
You would think.
Yet Baby Yodes is now with Luke Skywalker. Are we going to, like, is there going to be, like, a leap forward in time to skip that whole? Is it a montage? Or now is, like, season 3 going to be, like, heavily involved Luke Skywalker? Or heavily, like, not include Baby Yodes?
I have no idea. Or is it going to be that in the first episode, why can't I remember his name? The lead character's name, Mando, whatever.
Mando.
Is he going to encounter a problem that he needs Baby Yoda for some reason, and then he's going to go get him and, you know, promise to bring him back or something? Like, I don't know. I hope Luke Skywalker's not a main character.
I'm okay with them fast-forwarding this, like, some period of time. Like, I don't know, a couple years. Well, and Baby Yodes is like more in control of his superpowers, and he's back together with his dad.
Well, the other problem is that we are now running into the point where it's going to get close to what we saw in flashback in The Last Jedi, when Luke's school gets destroyed and what's his name, Kylo Ren, goes crazy. Like, whatever, they're hemming themselves in every time they bring in stuff from the main movies. They like shrink the box they're stuck in a little bit. I don't love it.
Skywalker can't be prominently involved. That just does not seem like an option. But the child has to be involved, and Mando has to be involved.
So
those two have to come back together post haste.
Here's another option: is you do an even shorter mini series of Jedi Academy, four episodes where you get to see Luke's school and you get to meet a whole bunch of new young Jedi, and you do basically Hogwarts for Jedi, and that's where we get our baby Yoda fix. And you obviously have to recast Luke Skywalker, because I'm not watching that Masters of Terras Kasi PlayStation 1 cutscene for like another minute. And then you do a Mando episode, and then you sync them back up. I don't know. That could work. But the ending, so the post-credit scene is a Boba Fett scene.
Yes.
And ends by saying the Book of Boba Fett coming in December 2021, which is when I thought they announced Mandalorian Season 3. So are we maybe leaving our entire original cast aside? Is that what we're doing?
Oh, so you think Season 3 might be the Book of Boba Fett?
I don't know.
And,
I mean,
It's like Mandalorian, the Mandalorian : the Book of Boba Fett. It might be Season 3 of Mando.
Yep. I mean, it's possible.
So, okay, so my interpretation of that was this was like the announcement of like a whole new show.
If it's a whole new show, that's the third spinoff of Mandalorian announced in the last, like, 5 days. I don't know. That seems...
You know, what you're saying, though, it makes sense. Yes, that actually does make sense. And it would give them, like, a little more time on the clock, as you were saying, since they're kind of getting hemmed in chronologically here, to, like, go have some adventures with Boba Fett for a while.
Yep. Or you could even do what I said, do similar thing to what I said, do 6 episodes of the Book of Boba Fett, 4 episodes of Jedi Academy or whatever they're going to call it, and then culminate with a 3-episode run where you bring this Mandalorian back. I have no idea. But it's interesting. It's kind of like we were talking about with Washington football. It's like, it's neat having no idea what they're doing.
Well, two quick thoughts. One is Boba Fett's going to need a little buddy, and I'm just throwing this out there. Let's see if it plays. A baby Wookiee.
Oh, that would be adorable. That would be super cute.
Just a little baby Chewie.
I'm sold.
Two, my memory's not good enough, man. Like that whole where he goes down into the lair and shoots that dude with like the weird hair, white head situation. I vaguely remember that dude. I don't really remember the significance. Like, I guess he had something to do with Boba Fett going into the Sarlacc pit like 35 years ago.
Yeah.
He
was Jabba the Hutt's butler, sort of major domo guy. And now apparently what we're supposed to take from the ending is that he has sort of taken over Jabba's role and gotten fat and whatever.
Okay. See, I don't even remember what happened to Jabba. Like, that was just so long ago, I can't remember.
Princess Leia chokes him while she's wearing the iconic gold bikini outfit that, you know, launched 10 million cosplayers.
So was this in the second Star Wars movie?
No, it was in the third, Return of the Jedi.
Okay. So, like, I just haven't... The only one of the original trilogy I've watched in literally the past 30 years was the first one. A New Hope. What's the first one called?
You nailed it. You're on it.
Yeah. So I'm really rusty. We watched the third one. I thought we watched the third one sort of recently, but we might have just started with when they were on the Ewoks planet, because like my little kids were watching. And they just wanted to see the Ewoks.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame them. The Ewoks are adorable.
Like I don't remember. I don't remember the Sarlacc pit whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, you didn't miss much.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm gonna miss Mando.
Yeah, me too.
Really fun Friday night groove. The kids go to bed. Christine's off doing whatever she's doing. She's watching Hallmark movies. I'm settling in with 40 minutes of Mando and like a really strong craft beer. And like all the lights are down. Just me and Mando.
This is a romantic.
I really enjoyed that.
It's a really romantic picture you're painting. I really like it. I want to do a quick tease for next week because I was going to do it this week, but we got to wrap up. For next week, in place of Mandalorian, I want you to be prepared to discuss your 50 best albums of 2020 for real, which I think went live today. I saw it today.
I won't subject you to all 50.
I want all 50. Note by note.
Okay.
And that's next week instead of Mandalorian. That's what I want to hear about.
All right. I want you to, I don't know, what should I give you as homework? I want you to listen to the first track on the new Neil Young Lost album, Homegrown. It's called Separate Ways. And Levon Helm, the drummer from the band, is on the sticks. Just fall into that groove for a little while.
Okay, we'll do. It's not a cover of the Journey song, is it?
They have a song called Separate Ways.
Oh, come on, Jamie.
Those bastards.
All right. I will listen to that. You prepare to talk at length about 50 albums.
All right, sounds good, man.
Talk to you.
Have a good week. Bye.